Good morning. It's 8 o'clock. You're listening to KVNF Mountain Grown Community Radio, and this is regional news for the Western Slope. I'm Travis Bubenik. Governor John Hickenlooper says Colorado has weathered a tough year, but showed the world what it means to come together and be strong. The governor gave what could be his final State of the State address on Thursday before he faces re-election in the fall. Binta Berkelin has more from the state capitol.
The governor's speech began on a somber note as he remembered the tests Colorado faced in 2013. The head of the state's Department of Corrections was gunned down, natural disasters plagued the summer and fall, and then there was December's shooting at Arapahoe High School.
Colorado has been scorched. Colorado has been flooded. Colorado once again endured senseless, inexplicable violence. Yet despite all of it, we did not let that define us. That is not our story. Our story and what we showed the world is Colorado does not shut down. Colorado does not quit. Colorado does not break.
Hickenlooper says the state thrived. He talked about an improving economy and a more friendly business climate that brought new companies to the state.
When it came to job growth, in 2010, this state was ranked 40th in the nation. Now, 3 years later, Colorado is the fourth fastest job growth state in the country, 40th to fourth.
Looking ahead to 2014, the governor outlined his goals for the new legislative session, such as capping tuition hikes at colleges and universities. He also wants to update the state's telecommunications laws and provide broadband internet to rural Colorado. Democratic Representative Diane Mitch Bush from Steamboat Springs called the speech inspiring.
And to me, that was one of his most critical messages. We're Colorado. We work together. And we can recover and rebuild and connect for everyone.
Overall, it was a very positive tone. I mean, after the year that we've had with all of the different things that are out there, you know, the governor needs to be the cheerleader for the state, and so he came out and did that.
That's Republican House Minority Leader Brian Del Grosso of Loveland. He says he's pleased with Colorado's economic recovery and an unemployment rate that's lower than the national average.
The state has definitely made progress. You can't argue with a lot of the numbers, but the statement that we've still continued to make is there's still areas of our state that are still struggling, and they're not seeing the job growth that we're seeing right here in Denver or on the Front Range. And we have to continue to look at all the four corners of our state.
Governor Hickenlooper urged lawmakers to try and put politics aside, something both parties pledged to do before the start of every legislative session. But last year was historically divisive. Democrats passed stricter gun laws, a renewable energy mandate for electric co-ops, and same-day voter registration. Republican gubernatorial candidate Senator Greg Brophy from Ray says Hickenlooper failed to lead, especially on the issue of gun control.
He was the chief divider here. He could have broken out his veto pen, represent, you know, the average Coloradan instead of the mayor of New York City and liberal special interest groups. And so I'm disappointed that, you know, he tells less than half of the story of his tenure as governor.
For his part, Hickenlooper seemed relaxed in front of the joint session of the legislature. And while he didn't defend the gun laws, he did say guns are only one piece of the puzzle.
Another clear piece is mental health. Trying to identify and assist those who are feeling isolated, bullied, the mentally ill, and try as this may sound, those who are feeling abandoned and unloved.
Hickenlooper didn't call for any further action. In fact, the majority of his speech focused on past policies. The governor says his top priority this session is making sure lawmakers are, quote, in it together to get things done. But getting everyone on the same page may be an uphill challenge, especially during an election year. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
That report comes to us from Rocky Mountain Community Radio. It's a collaboration of public and community radio stations across the state of Colorado. Some Western Slope and Front Range citizens are pushing for tougher air pollution rules, and regulations for oil and gas companies. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel is reporting that a coalition of citizen groups is asking the state's Air Quality Control Commission to draw up some rules that would specifically protect the air around residential areas. The state is planning a hearing on its newly proposed rules in mid-February. If approved, the rules would make Colorado the first state to specifically limit methane emissions in the energy industry. According to the Daily Sentinel, the group say the proposed rules as they're written don't do enough to protect air quality around homes. They're specifically asking state regulators to make companies locate any oil and gas facilities a quarter mile away from buildings or recreation areas. Two oil and gas industry groups in Colorado say the state's new rules will be costly. They've also questioned whether a blanket air quality rules makes sense for rural communities that don't have as much of an ozone problem as metro centers along the Front Range. The booms and busts of the oil and gas industry have taken a toll on many communities in the West. In Wyoming, the coal bed methane bust in the last 10 years left about 1,200 abandoned gas wells behind, sometimes right in the middle of once prosperous ranch land. For the latest edition of Sounds of the High Country from KDNK in Carbondale, Eric Scalak talks to Wyoming Public Radio's Irina Zurov about her article in the most recent issue of High Country News on Wyoming's abandoned gas wells.
Bill and Marjorie West's ranch in rural Wyoming is in rough, mountainous terrain. They grow alfalfa and run cattle there. They own some of their mineral rights for the natural gas beneath their property, but not all of them.
I guess in the early 2000s, coal bed methane wells started appearing on their property. Some of it is on their land, which I think is kind of important to mention. Some of it is not, however. And, you know, eventually as gas prices fell, as some of the wells basically stopped producing, the wells started being abandoned. So right now they have over 100 wells on their property.
But first, what exactly is an abandoned or orphaned well?
Either the company has declared bankruptcy and walked away and is not responding to any communication from the state and from the regulatory agencies. Sometimes they just disappear altogether, you know, if it's a smaller company that kind of dissolves and there's just no one to get in touch with. But basically what it means is no one's taking care of it. Whether that's because the company is bankrupt, whether that's because the company has disappeared, it's what it sounds like. It's abandoned. No one is claiming responsibility for it.
The Wests are upset about these wells. They've been petitioning the state to clean them up for years. The reason abandoned wells can be problematic, well, it's because sometimes those gas wells need to be reclaimed. Sometimes that just means planting some seeds. Other times it means actually closing up or plugging the wells.
And there's pretty different estimates for how much it costs. I cite one study in the piece where the estimate is about $30,000 to plug one well on average. The state put out a new report. They put that number closer to $7,000 on average to plug one well. But it also depends on the depth of the well. You know, the cost increases the deeper you go. And there's priorities in terms of what the state is going to plug. And that is also going to depend on what the potential to pollute is, how big its mark is on the surface.
That process of reclamation is supposed to be paid for with bonds, paid for by the company drilling the wells, and are usually in the neighborhood of about $20,000. But sometimes those bonds just aren't big enough to cover the cost of reclamation. So then how is it paid for?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, it depends what land it's on.
On private or state land, it's the state's responsibility. On federal land, it becomes the Bureau of Land Management's responsibility.
The state has a bit of a safety net because it has a conservation tax. And so what that conservation tax is used for is, one, funding the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, and two, part of that money goes into this reclamation fund. And so the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission is allowed to use some of that money. What they've been doing is putting aside about $1 million annually, and they use that money to plug wells. If it's on federal land, the BLM actually has no fund whatsoever put aside to take care of these wells on federal lands. So the way that they do it is if there's some money left over from their general budget, then they can use it.
But now, with 1,200 abandoned wells in Wyoming and the possibility of another several thousand problematic wells being added to that list,
the conservation tax may not be able to cover it. So, you know, there's a proposal being put forward right now of how to plug these wells quickly. You know, there's a 4, 5, and 7 year timeline being proposed. And I think all three of those timelines, if all of the problem wells that I had mentioned before end up becoming abandoned, that conservation tax is not going to cover those expenses. So then it becomes a question of where do you get the other money from? And that's going to be something the legislature needs to decide in the state.
As Zhorov writes, Wyoming's Oil and Gas Conservation Commission is thinking about raising the bonds and that conservation tax to cover those costs. And Zhorov thinks changes are likely, in part because not only is the commission hearing from constituents dealing with abandoned wells on their property, but some members of the commission even have firsthand experiences of their own.
You know, the chairman of the committee, he has some of these abandoned wells on his own property and on his neighbor's property. He's a rancher up there in the northern part of the state. And so this was a personal problem for him. It's also his constituents that come to him and are continually telling him, you know, we still have these abandoned wells on our property. And so I think the fact that there are legislators from that area on this committee and the fact that they're hearing from their constituents and have been for years is helping to ramp up this effort as well, because, you know, this particular lawmaker reacted really strongly and was like, no, this is a problem we've been seeing for years. I've been seeing it for years. It's a problem for me and my constituents, and we really need to fix it much faster than you're proposing.
For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Eric Scalak.
Eric Scalak spoke with Wyoming Public Radio's Arenia Zarov about abandoned gas wells in the West. That comes from her latest article for High Country News. Antler collecting is now closed in the Gunnison Basin. Colorado Parks and Wildlife says for some public lands in the region, collecting antler sheds is prohibited until March 14th. And then from March 15th through May 15th, antlers can only be collected from sunset to 10 a.m. CPW says the off-season is put in place to prevent wildlife from being disturbed during the winter when those animals are using a lot of energy and losing some of their body weight. The regulations also help to protect the sage-grouse habitats in the Gunnison region. You can find more details about the prohibited antler collecting dates online at the Colorado Parks and Wildlife's website. You're listening to KVNF, Mountain Grown Community Radio. This is Regional News. Stay tuned for the Friday morning music mix. For KVNF News, I'm Travis Bubinick.